Mo.
Lab.
Ho. Mo.
Lab.
Hola.
Hey.
I hate both of you.
Lucio's a bit upset.
Lucio's jealous of Amy's ass right now.
No.
You're really jealous of my ass.
I can't believe it. This is... If I had done this to you about Morrissey, if I had done this to you about Debbie Gibson, right?
Although I would be upset about that. If you,
what reaction would you have?
Can
right
I just
now?
Say, if you follow Debbie Gibson on Twitter, it's hilarious because she tweets
Stop changing
herself
the subject.
Singing her own songs on the radio in the car. What more could you want? But let's do the
Listen,
form first. That's Amy
okay,
the
Man. Yes, that's Lucio Buffone, and he is Baylen Leonard. This is Homolab. We're episode 103.
And we're sat in Soho. Yeah. And why... Amy, why does Lucio hate you today?
He hates me,
and
but
you,
he loves
Damon.
My ass because I am literally right now sitting in the same seat that Damon fucking Albarn was sitting in like about 10 minutes previous.
Literally, right? Just as I arrived, I came in and I had ordered, because we're in Maison Bertrose, and I ordered myself a wonderful cream tea, which I was preoccupied with carefully spreading my cream over my scone, which Amy thought was very sensual. And then... just as I'm finishing my scone, both of them are like, oh my God, OMG, OMG. Well, Damon Albarn was sat there, and you didn't tell me.
Lucio, he was literally 3 feet away from your face.
I had a cream
Listen.
Scone in front of me.
The cream scone, the scone was closer than Damon
Do you know what,
Albarn,
I kind of,
so.
I did see him at my peripheral vision, but I didn't recognize him. And I don't believe that Damon Albarn was sat here and you didn't tell me.
You call yourself a music journalist. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
and you're
normally.
Just, you're just distracted
normally I just,
by
you know,
scum.
Normally, I just call up their PRs and then meet them.
See, this is the issue. If even if Lucio doesn't have food in front of him, he's really bad at observing things. So if Lucio ever witnessed a crime or had to do one of those like police sketches, I can only imagine what it would come out as, because he doesn't notice things.
I've noticed every time you've had a haircut.
No, about 3 weeks after I've had a haircut, he'll go, and now he just will randomly be like, did you have a haircut? Just hoping that he'll get it right that day.
Well, have you noticed that we actually have a guest with us live
yes, I
in
have
the
noticed.
Studio?
Damon Albarn.
Damon Albarn.
No, he's not here.
No, sorry. We haven't. Sorry, this sounds really bad. We couldn't get Damon Albarn.
I'm feeling really good about myself.
The number two out of 90s icons.
Yeah.
Just after Blur in the hierarchy of British pop.
Yeah. That's me. We have Alan Miller, who is currently starring in Beats at Soho Theatre, which is all about 90s rave culture. And he's a bit of a superstar DJ north of the border.
And
yeah. Sometimes south of the border.
And like zone 27 in Scotland.
Welcome.
Otherwise known as
Welcome,
time.
Alan Miller.
Yeah.
So Damon Albarn, the flutter of excitement. As soon as I realized who it was, I went so red. I was so excited.
I can't believe you didn't say. Why would neither of you have
Because you'd
said?
Be a freak show. And
no, I wouldn't. Why would I have done that?
No,
because look at you now.
Look at you now. As soon as you found out, you started screaming and you embarrassed us in front of this whole cafe.
Well, I don't care.
You'd have jumped over in front of him with like cream on your face. It would have been really weird.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you.
It wasn't just Damon Albarn.
What would have been wrong
It wasn't
with that?
Just Damon Albarn. He was with his parents.
Amy's making that bit up. She doesn't know. They just happen to be older people.
I'm sure they were.
You can be
parents.
Friends with older people.
Maybe it was Justine from Elastica.
Oh, that would have been even more exciting.
Oh my God, I would have told you.
I would have freaked out. So I can't believe out of Amy LeMay, Lucio Buffone, both prestigious whatever list celebrities, Alan, very into the musical DJing world, I'm the only one that's actually met Damon before.
Don't rub it in, Baylen.
Me.
I mean, really.
I've met him before.
Do you have to rub it in?
The thing is, he didn't notice me. That's, like, right now he's screaming at his mom going, what do you mean? Baylen was sat right there and you didn't point it out. I hate you, Mom. No, he clearly would never remember who I am at all, but
yeah.
I met him on some radio
I barely
show
remember
ago.
Who you are.
Yeah, but anyway, I met him, you guys didn't.
Thanks, Baylen.
Okay, thanks.
That makes us all feel so much better. Hey, we've got apologies in order because we haven't been...
As usual.
We've kind of... Everything's gone a bit
frazzled
around these parts recently. We did an episode and then we had to scrap it.
Weeks.
And then last week, for some reason...
Yeah, we just didn't get our shit together, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amy ran out of space in their inbox. Amy's box.
Oh yeah, Amy, your box was full. It was bouncing stuff back.
Yeah, that's exactly
as usual. Amy's box was refusing anymore.
Yeah.
But we're here now, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You were in Cardiff at the Iris Prize.
I was. I hosted the Iris Prize, and
which you did last year as well.
Yeah. And it's the biggest LGBT. Well, it's one of the biggest film prizes in the world, actually, because it just so happens to have an LGBT slant to it. But the winner actually gets the prize is worth £25,000. Actually get all the money to make a new film in Wales. And funnily enough, last year the winner was there. He's from Australia. And this year the winner was from Australia.
Really?
As well.
So what was the film this year?
I didn't actually see it. I saw a clip from it and it looked a bit like a Kate Bush video.
Do you know what? Speaking of Kate Bush, guess what I'm going to see tonight?
What?
I'm going to the Battersea Arts Centre to see an all-male version of Wuthering Heights, using the music of Kate Bush.
So
why hasn't anybody done this before?
Why haven't you invited me to that, number one? Number two, why are you taking Michael? He hates Kate Bush.
Does he?
Yes.
This is the discussion to have off air. I never take Lucia to theatre because he hates theatre.
Yeah, we've been over this. Don't ask him.
I hate the theatre Balin takes me to. That's what I hate. I quite like good theatre. When it's that audience participation, I don't want that. I pay good money. Well, you know, kind of pay good money.
You don't. You get
someone's
comps.
Paid good money. And I want them to entertain me. I don't want to be part of the friggin' show. I want to sit there and watch it.
Okay, Alan, does your show involve audience participation?
Not strictly, no. There's a little bit of participation at the beginning, which is just kind of meant as a sort of chat, like a little kind of chat where Kieran introduces himself and he introduces me and introduces what the show's about. Sometimes people take that as this is a kind of like behind you, you know, we can shout out thing.
Yeah.
And then Kieran usually goes, actually, no, this is...
Calm yourself down.
This is a serious piece of theatre. It's just going to be me talking and you just kind of need to shut the fuck up.
There's just the way it should be.
Continues.
There is a problem with theatre like that and stand-up comedy to a degree. Once you engage an audience... they kind of think it's free reign for them to that they're part of the show.
Yeah.
So it must be quite difficult to start off engaging the audience and then be like, stop now, we're acting.
I think part of it is to put them at ease to sort of know that they don't have to sit very kind of, this is very interesting and well-written contemporary theatre. That there's a little bit of leeway for them to laugh and it's meant to be funny and they can be a little bit animated but they can't sort of shout out, he's behind you! I love this song!
Since it's about 90s rave culture, I'm assuming there's loads of music involved.
Yeah, well the whole thing is I DJ through the entire show and there's music kind of underlying almost all of the story. And the tracks have been kind of selected to sort of, you know, key in with whatever is happening within the narrative. There is a proper rave scene in the middle of the show where the music is very, very loud.
Surely that involves the audience, no?
Well, they don't dance, no.
Does it involve psychedelic drugs?
Well, it has done in the past.
Tangentially.
Because I remember you telling me about a show that you did up at the Edinburgh Festival when people arrived and, you know, the show was on quite late in Edinburgh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was on like... 10:30, 11:00 at night or something?
Well, we had a 10:30 slot at the Edinburgh Festival and it was the same the year before and I think one of the problems was that because people are there and they see comedy and they've been drinking all day, they kind of get into the show and they're a bit rowdy and they think, yay, it's like my comedy, like join in. And there would be people would jump up and sort of, when a song came on, and go, yes, yes! Really, really drunkenly. Or, you know, there's a key part in the show, you know, which I won't really give away, but an audience member was like shouting out, just like, just take it. Just take that bone.
So what kind of music is in it then?
So it's mostly, I guess, kind of like early to like mid-90s. So things like Prodigy, the Chemical Brothers.
So Utah Saints.
Otakra. Utah Saints isn't in it, but Annihilating Rhythm's in it. And Dominator's in it as well. It's a classic rave and a Higher State of Consciousness.
Excellent.
In it. So yeah, there's a lot of rave music, but then there's a lot of quite... I guess kind of industrial sort of alienating kind of urban sort of like electronic music because the place set in Livingston and so young boy lives in a very kind of rundown environment. So there are three characters and they're all it's all kind of keyed into reflecting their moods.
Right.
And how does, so he's telling his story, is it his story of growing up?
So this is a story about a very particular part in his life where him and his friends runs out from his mum's house and they go to a rave together and they go to a rave together and it gets raided by the police and he gets arrested.
Right, okay.
And so there's this whole kind of like trajectory of him, you know, very excitingly going along to this, and then experiences his first kind of, you know, really kind of expanded, kind of open consciousness, kind of, you know, moment where he's in the rave and he feels connected and he feels something really new for the first time in his life.
Mm.
And then it all kind of crashes down because this is at the time when the anti-rave legislation is on and the repetitive beats legislation is on, so that it's raided. He ends up being arrested. His mum comes to collect him. And then he reflects on what's happened and what this kind of hedonistic moment of togetherness has suddenly kind of opened in his mind.
It's a one man show. You're the only person in it, yeah.
So there's two people in the show. There's Kieran Hurley, who's the writer.
Okay.
And performer.
He's a writer and performer. So he narrates the entire story.
And you're DJing.
And I DJ. Just, you know, it's kind of like a right and left setup.
Mm.
And I'm on the left, kind of playing the music through the whole show.
This is like a bit of a dream job for you, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, it seems like the job that I've been preparing for my entire life.
You've been a DJ for so long.
Yeah, I've been a DJ for a really long time, and I've been an arts kind of theatre, kind of contemporary art PR person for a really long time as well. To suddenly have those two things kind of merge into one job where, hey, are you any good at DJing and do you know anything about contemporary theatre?
Yeah.
That's me.
But you kind of didn't cut your teeth as a rave DJ though, did you?
No, I've done a lot of different DJing. For a long time, I DJed Northern Soul, kind of 60s and kind of retro stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I reached a point where I thought, I can't really play another soul record ever again. I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd been working in music PR and for a lot of this time when I initially started working in PR. And I worked for Peaches, Gonzalez, DJ Hell. So I was exposed to a lot of electronic music kind of just before Electroclash kind of like kicked in. So I also had this kind of other life as a, you know, as an electronic DJ playing a lot of dance music. And then I did that for about 10 years, and I worked the really big club event in Glasgow called Death Disco, which is one of the biggest kind of electronic club nights. It was kind of like a 3,000 capacity venue. I ran a night at the Glasgow School of Art, which is really kind of infamous. I worked with Optimo Spacio as their press agent.
Love
and my
Optimo,
DJ
love
yeah.
Optimo.
So I've kind of done lots of different things and moved through different stuff.
Yeah, a typical kind of like DJ thing where you just sort of doing lots of different
And I like lots
and
of different music as well. I mean, I like a huge amount of different music. So I invariably get bored of things and I think, right, it's time to stop listening to something else. I want to do something new. I'm interested in something else now.
Were you ever involved in 90s rave culture? Do you identify with the
really bizarrely, because I lived in Kilmarnock in Ayrshire, we lived really near to where Hangar 13 was, and my sister and a lot of her friends went to Hangar 13, the original like infamous raves that were kind of all over the newspapers, and they knew a couple of the kids who died taking ecstasy on this night. So I was listening to the Jesus Mary Chain and the Coptic Twins. I wasn't listening to like Green Man or any of these like really intensive rave records, but they all were, and so I kind of absorbed a lot of that and heard a lot of stories of how they all behaved. So weirdly, I have a kind of a connection, purely geographical, kind of youthful connection to.
Yeah, and
did you used to read M8 magazine?
M8 magazine, yeah.
That was
M8 magazine was a favorite, and that was very much where that kind of that kind of hardcore scene, which sprung up all around the west of Scotland, kind of was kind of based, and that still kind of continues to this day, because that hardcore scene is one of the things that kept Bebo alive. Does anyone remember Bebo?
Yes, which is really big in Scotland. It's like as big as Facebook.
Yeah,
you know,
in Scotland, it's huge because this crazy hardcore community.
I always thought it was for like young tweens.
Well, it was all over the world, but in Scotland, it's as big as
it
Facebook.
Died all over the world, but Scotland clung on to it.
Like
they clung on and they wouldn't let go.
I read actually the guy from Bebo sold it for like 180 million and he's just bought it back for 1 million and he wants to revive it. Well, obviously he's going to head straight
to
Scotland.
He's going to start. He's going to have to sail down in Livingston and start putting his plan together.
So how has it been going at the Soho then?
It's been really good.
The
audiences have been good. I mean, I think they're much more of a theatre audience. So they're not, you know, they're not coming in from having been drinking and being crazy. So people, I think, are a lot more engaged with the narrative, engaged with the plot. We've had really good audiences and a really kind of warm response. But it's definitely, after having done The Fringe, where it was just kind of a bit crazy, this is much more sort of, you know, restrained.
Yeah, you guys are off on tour as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got a whole series of tours, a lot of which I can't remember. We're going to Brighton and Manchester, Stockton, you know, Bhopal, Thailand, the Gold Coast.
How long is it running at the Soho Theatre?
So it runs till the end of this week. Performances are every night. at 9 p.m. and we're in the I guess the middle space, the upstairs.
Goes until 6 a.m.
Yeah.
it's just over an hour long show, and we also do a matinee on Saturday at 4:30.
Oh, great!
But all of the rest of this week till Saturday, our run is on.
And it's called Beats.
Beats by Kieran Hurley at the Soho Theatre. Come along.
Mm. Or catch it in Brighton. Or,
yeah.
Or catch it in Brighton, or Manchester, or Coventry, or Stockton, or you know, somewhere.
Bhopal. Are you billed as your DJ name, or your real name?
I'm billed as my DJ name, which is Hush.
What's your
Bobby.
DJ name?
Hush Bobby. But I've been calling myself Hush, because I really took to Snoop Dogg's decision that he wanted to change his name from Snoop Dogg to Snoop Lion.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, he's maturing his brand. Maybe after, like, DJing for nearly 20 years, I should drop
Hush
the puppy.
Tiger.
Yeah.
And just stick
Hush
with the
dog.
Hush.
Yeah. Because I'm older now, and at first things about little choir.
Yeah. Hush dog.
Hey, Alan, will you stick around and give us your comments on the latest news from our friends at Gaystar News?
Yeah, let's do that.
Homo
Lab.
Homo
Lab.
Will we keep on the dancing, discoing and taking drugs vibe with our top news story today? The council in Lambeth, which is responsible for Vauxhall, is bringing in a new licensing policy to crack down on drugs. Now, some people are worried this could affect the gay scene there. The area is popular, especially with a plus 25 crowd. There are a number of gay clubs there that are open 24 hours a day, including fire and area. There's also been a number of deaths due to GBH and other drugs that people are taking on the scene. So the new policy is going to restrict all licenses and bars to 2 a.m. Now, that's only going to apply to new licenses which are granted, but there could be an issue if any existing club which has a later license is forced in any way to reapply for its license. Councillor Jack Hopkins, who's a cabinet member for Safety and Stronger Neighbourhoods, says that the council's supportive of well-managed gay bars and clubs, but he says, however, in their operations during... if their operations bring drug dealing, antisocial behaviour or nuisance to an area, or put customers' safety at risk, then we have a responsibility to residents and businesses to intervene. Now, hopefully next week on Homo Lab, we're going to be speaking to Councillor Jack Hopkins, who was too busy to speak to us this week, but he does actually want to come and set the record straight, because a number of people are really worried about whether this is maybe a start of a clampdown on the clubbing scene in Vauxhall, especially with the new neighbours and the posh apartments and the American Embassy moving in there.
Well, now, the thing about this is that the reason Vauxhall became such a haven for clubs and specifically late night clubs is because where we're sat right now, Westminster Council really didn't want any more. And so they did exactly this, didn't they? They stopped giving new licences that meant that you could be open past a certain time, and they started restricting all sorts of things, meaning that it wasn't viable for more bars and clubs to open up here. And Lambeth Council, which is Vauxhall, was like, hey, come, you know, revitalize Vauxhall. We've got all these arches. Do something with them. We'll become the club mecca. And now it seems that maybe they've had enough of that.
And it'll be interesting to speak to Jack next week. I think the two sides of the story are, there's one that perhaps there is a move to sanitize Vauxhall and, you know, bring in more elegant money, let's say.
Well, it's definitely changed. I mean, there's a Waitrose now.
But then
that changes everything.
The other side is, I was speaking on Facebook with Patrick Lilly, who's a big club promoter, and he was saying that, do clubs really need to go on all night? Is there really a need for clubs to go on past 4 o'clock? Isn't that just a lack of imagination of what to do in a club? If the only way you can get people to go is to, you know, kind of be open 24 hours a day, is that and lack of imagination in the scene as to things that will maybe bring people into an area sooner? And, you know, maybe with Vauxhall, maybe what it does need, if anything, is something to bring people to the area earlier, so that there's more to do on a Saturday night
really
at about
that
10
many
or 11
pubs.
O'clock.
There's not really that many pubs for early drinking in Vauxhall, I will say.
Yeah, that's always been the problem, is that if you're going to meet up with your friends before, you know, and Ducky opens quite early, but of course you want to meet people before you go there, whatever.
Yeah.
There is really nowhere to meet that is nice or cool or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
To just
There's
meet
your, barcode.
To, but you know, that's a whole, it's you don't
nasty.
Really want to meet your girlfriends. if there's a mixed group of you going out, then you don't really want to meet them at barcode. And it's a whole different vibe.
Please let us know your thoughts on this, because I'm going to be speaking to Councillor Jack Hopkins. I think it's Tuesday next week, which will be something like the 30th of October, something like that.
You were out late in Vauxhall on Sunday, weren't you, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about this is maybe there's an issue of gentrification, where we're an area which has really benefited from the inroads of a certain culture and a certain part of the community for a long time suddenly feels that they want to kind of escalate that gentrification to, like you say, a more elevated and elegant level of financial kind of like influx. So they, in a way, they then want to cleanse the area of the culture which existed there before in order to kind of create this really gentrified environment. Because it's interesting to note that in their want to clamp down on the licenses and try and kind of control that kind of nighttime life, they're not providing any sort of idea of what they would do to replace it or how it could be moved in some way. It's just, that's just going to stop.
I think
if we feel it needs to.
I mean,
we're going to be very balanced about it, but ultimately we'll probably feel that something needs to stop.
They're
not saying, why don't we do, how can we kind of like reintegrate the community into something else? Maybe there's kind of earlier bars, maybe we need to look at giving business opportunities for these events and these promoters to do something different.
I think
it seems more like a kind of closed conversation than an open conversation.
And this is what we want to speak to the council about, really. We want to find out, because obviously if a council did want to shut Vauxhall down, it's not going to do it in one piece of legislation overnight.
And
it's
they
going to
have
be a
one
gradual,
hell of a fight on their hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's going to be a gradual process. So
incrementally, it could very easily creep in.
Yeah.
I'd just like to remind Lambeth Council about the absolute fuss and fight they had on their hands, well, a good 15 years ago when they were going to sell off the Vauxhall Tavern and demolish it, and how everyone in the community really rallied round to make sure that didn't happen. So
there's a proper love for the Vauxhall Tavern, and there's a history of the Vauxhall Tavern. I do wonder, though, if they were going to shut something like Union, or one of the arches that changes its name every 2 months, if there would be that sort of support and love for that.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is that, clubs were going into these arches because nobody else wanted to go into these arches.
Yeah.
And now, like you pointed out, Lucio, is that we've got all these brand new high rises, the American Embassy's going in right down the street. Suddenly there's a Nando's in one of the arches, there's
Dirty Burger.
Soho House's Dirty Burger is in one of them. And maybe now that there's other options for those arches, the council is kind of like
giraffe if we're lucky.
Oh my god!
We would love to know what you think about this. Let us know. We're at Homo Lab on Twitter.
At Homo Lab, right? Well, I've got news on the equal marriage front for you, as the New Jersey correspondent.
Yes.
Great news, actually. At 12:01 on Monday, New Jersey officially became the 14th state in the United States to permit same-sex marriage. First in line to be married by the mayor of New York, Cory Booker. It was very hastily arranged.
The mayor of New York?
No, the mayor of Newark.
Oh, right. I was beside you, sorry.
Sorry, Newark.
It's Michael Bloomberg is the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
I know, that's what I was confused then.
Joseph...
It was your accent, dear. I didn't understand those
right,
New Jersey...
Newark. Joseph Panicidi and Orville Bell, they were both 65 years old, and they got married. They met in a bar in New York 15
years ago.
I hear
the difference
now.
And
it was like 1 minute past midnight, and they got married in the Newark City Hall. This is we've been following this, haven't we, with Governor Chris Christie refusing to accept the ruling by the New Jersey State Supreme Court. And they basically said, listen, whether you want this or not, this has got to go through. And he didn't try and block it. And so now we have equal marriage in New Jersey.
Hurrah.
Chris Christie did fight it at every single stage. So it's quite amazing, actually.
He fought it, but I think probably he's quite glad that it's now.
Yeah, because hasn't he now said, stop trying to appeal it, let's just get on with it.
Yeah.
You know the next state where it's been challenged in court?
Tennessee. Well, 55%...
The most dangerous state in the United States of America, as revealed last week.
Really?
Tennessee, the most violent crime
really?
In the whole of the United States.
Not kissing cousins, but killing cousins.
Killing cousins, I know. Anyway, yeah.
So anyway, I think I might run away to New Jersey and get married.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think do it.
Who
are
you going to marry?
Well, that's up for debate.
So if you have like a civil partnership in one country... You get married to someone else in another country?
I really hope so.
I
really hope so.
Oh god, I think that's inappropriate. Okay,
this is what various Christian groups warned everybody about.
So normally, Lucio is our Italian correspondent. Amy, you normally touch on gender issues quite heavily, but I'm going to do both of those things now in one story.
Italian trannies.
Okay, a prince turns out to be a princess. Last month, an untouched Eucretian tomb. Did I say that right? Eucretian.
No.
Etruscan.
Yeah, I can't say that word. It's one of those words I can't say. Etruscan tomb was found in Tuscany, in Italy. Now, archaeologists and news reports declared that the bones were of a prince clutching a spear beside his wife's ashes. But there was a little bit of a problem because they did a bone analysis and it revealed that the bones actually belonged to a woman. So the remains are still a bit of a mystery, but basically what they did was they assumed that the one holding the spear was the male, and the pile of ashes beside with all this decorative jewelry on top was the female. But it turns out that actually the gender roles were completely reversed. So what this does is it challenges what we kind of assume gender roles should be, and it makes you question, you know, whether way back in the day that was reversed a little bit.
Well, maybe it was just a gay man and a lesbian that got married.
Well, that is.
And he had this, she had the spear, and he had the jewelry.
No, but I find that interesting because, you know, we do automatically, I mean, look, if you go to the British Museum or any of that, and you kind of, you know, see the mummies, yeah, and the remains, and you make these assumptions based on how decorative,
yeah,
one is, and if one's kind of a warrior, then you assume the gender of those. But, you know, maybe that's not always been the way, because as we know, in the animal kingdom, you know, the females are the really plain ones, and the males are the one that's got all the jewelry on.
Yeah.
But then also you have to think about how those particular relics and how that information is filtered through the patriarchal kind of values of museums, you know, through history. You've just simply chosen to omit things which they felt were, like, unpleasant,
yeah,
or offensive.
Mm.
They just simply didn't include them or rewrote them in order to fit into kind of particular,
yeah,
ideas that they had about how genders were divided.
Yeah.
But, you know, is it possible that in this particular tribe that the females were kind of the hunter-gatherers and the males were kind of the decorative homemakers in this? I just think it opens up all sorts of interesting gender issues. No?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Good.
So who wears the jewelry in your relationship then?
Oh no, we're kind of an anti-jewelry household. Bailey had a bit of string around his wrist, which thank God he's got rid of.
Yeah.
No, we don't really do jewelry.
It was my, it was a religious string, like Madonna.
You
like
weren't
a Kabbalah string.
It was a Kabbalah string.
Did your mom buy it at the dollar store?
No, it wasn't a Kabbalah string. It was just like
a dollar Kabbalah string.
Is that the dollar Kabbalah string that you can purify nuclear waste with?
Yeah, exactly.
Just tie it around in a little bow and it takes all out of it.
I like a wrist thing every now and again.
I'm sure
like
you
a,
do,
I like
Bailey.
A bit of string
sure
every now and again. That was the news from our friends at Gay Star News.
Ho Mo Lab. Ho Mo
Lab.
Are we done? Is that it? What's going on?
Well, we
what are we doing now? Amy just wants to sit in Damon Auburn's seat for,
yeah,
as long as possible now.
Do you need to go? Does Alan,
yeah,
need to go?
Yeah, I need to buy a cake and I need to go. Cause I
Why are you buying a cake?
Because I want one so desperately.
Oh, Alan, we could have got you a cake.
I
think
he wanted a cake.
Oh.
There was, when I came back in, there was like a huge queue.
Right. Okay. Well, we can't.
I've told BNT all the way.
We can't prevent Alan from having his cake any longer.
No. What kind of cake are you going for?
Whichever is the most exorbitantly crazy looking cake.
Oh, okay. That's a fine choice downstairs.
I've been eating very healthily, and I want something that literally I can just smear all over my face. That's what I want.
Right. Well, thanks very much, Alan, for joining us. And
great collect
with
the show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's about it for us.
Yeah, we'll be back
next week.
We'll
be back next week. Don't forget, you can always get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at Homo Lab.
Especially your questions about Vauxhall. And don't think either of you are forgiven. I still hate both of you.
Thanks.
I'm fine with that. Okay. See you later. Amy,
bye.
What have we been?
We've been the Queers in Your Ears.
Bye.
Homo
Lab. Homo
Lab.